Hello, this is the Kaiju Transmissions podcast. My name's Kyle Bird, and my co-host, Mr. Matt Parmley, has something to say to all of you out there in podcast land.
So we are announcing a fan contest. We want you, our lovely listeners, to have a chance to come on our show and record an episode with us, and you can pick the topic. So the way this works, being in contest, is you go out to Facebook or Twitter and share our latest episode, whatever that happens to be, and then you email us at kaijutransmissions@gmail.com a list of topics that you think might be cool to come on and discuss with us, and then we will select a random winner sometime in early February, and then we will record an episode in late February, all right? So the way this works, one more time, go on Twitter, go on Facebook, share the latest episode, and then immediately after that, email us a list of topics that you think would be fun to discuss. Got it? Make sense?
And yeah, you get to choose the topic you want to talk to us about, as long as it's within the boundaries of what we do. We want to talk to you, so share the podcast, keep listening, and hopefully you keep enjoying it.
Cool, and Twitter is KT_podcast. Facebook, just look us up under Kaiju Transmissions. In our email, one last time, kaijutransmissions@gmail.com.
Hey everyone, real quick, just a quick disclaimer. I don't know if you've listened to the last couple shows, but this is the third in a three-part series on the first three Ultra shows. Last week we did Ultraman, the week before we did Ultra Q. Originally they were going to be one big podcast, but we decided to split it into threes. So this is going to be part three, it is going to be Ultra 7. So enjoy it, and I'm sure we'll be doing more Ultraman stuff in the future. All right, thank you.
I think Eric's got this.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, so Ultraman's kicking butt on the ratings. It's starting to dip a little bit, but it's still doing really good. So TBS asks Tsuburaya for another order or another season, so 13 more episodes. And he says, hold on, I think we've pretty much exhausted this concept, and I think I have a better idea. So, in the meantime, the show ends, and to fill a six-month gap, TBS throws in a show called Captain Ultra, which is kind of like a space sort of Ultra Garrison type show. Meanwhile, Tsuburaya pitches a show called The Ultra Garrison, which is kind of about a team on a satellite orbiting the Earth who stops alien invasions. And to kind of capitalize on the success of Ultraman, at one point they look at maybe adding sort of an Ultraman or a Son of Ultraman type character to kind of strengthen the appeal of it. And they're also looking at other ideas like using capsule monsters. So when the hero can't fight or something like that, they're going to have little sort of capsules that you can throw down, and a monster from one of either Ultra Q or Ultraman were going to show up and they would fight on the good guy's side. So originally it was going to be Antlar, Red King, and Pagaila, I think. And they were going to reuse these old suits to kind of, for the economic reasons, basically. But they ultimately ended up going, that's concept gets carried through to the actual series, but they actually create new monsters for it. And so that gets kicked around for a while, and then they change the concept. They rename it to Ultra Eye, and this is when it sort of starts taking on some concepts that are close to my heart, because the lead author or concept creator of Kinjo, what's his last or first name?
Well, it's Tetsuro Kinjo. He's been a main writer on all these shows.
Yeah, but in this one, he starts. I think it's his most personal of the three, and he kind of puts. So he's Okinawan, and for those that don't know, Okinawa is a little sort of subtropical island just to the south of mainland Japan. And during World War II, the island of Okinawa experienced a lot of atrocities. So when the Americans landed, the Japanese soldiers at the time who had garrisons on Okinawa, you know, started telling the Okinawan people, like, that a lot of anti-American propaganda, like the Americans were going to come and rape their women, eat their children, and do these horrendous, heinous things. And so a lot of the Okinawans actually committed suicide, like in mass, like just massive numbers just committed suicide. And the ones that didn't were actually brutalized a lot by the Japanese military, because they considered Okinawan people as inferior or sort of not proper Japanese people. And then, you know, they're kind of there to serve them. And so after the war, the American occupation kind of took over the presence on the island, and mainland Japan kind of continued to think of the Okinawan people, even when Okinawa kind of successfully re-entered the Japanese government, whatever. They still considered them kind of inferior. You needed a passport to kind of travel from mainland to Okinawa, even though it's technically part of the same country. And so a lot of this kind of feeling misplaced kind of works its way into Ultra 7, the final show, which is about an alien amongst a science patrol-like team who kind of works with people that aren't like him, basically. And so I was actually served on a military base in Okinawa for 2 years. I love it. It's out of everywhere I've been in Japan, Okinawa is my favorite. So it kind of takes a little bit of a more personal connection with me. So Narita once again does designs for the aliens and the ships, and this time they took inspiration from Jerry Anderson's work, which is stuff like Thunderbirds. So in this show, you have a lot of like flying mechs and stuff that will combine or disconnect into several different vehicles, which is something right out of Thunderbirds. And a conscious decision was made to kind of push the hero back a little bit further in the narrative and allow the character in the stories to kind of take the forefront and to really sort of dig into some socio-political sort of issues about pacifism and the Vietnam War, racism, stuff like that. So that's about it. One kind of cool info note or trivia note is originally Ultra 7 was going, he's red and silver. Originally he was going to be blue and silver, but they nixed that at the last second because it was going to interfere with their sort of blue screen mat work. So, yeah, that's why we have the red and silver look. But you'll occasionally see toys and stuff with like a blue and silver Ultra 7. That's kind of a throwback to that concept. So,
all right. So yeah, I think where this one I think is going to stand out is it is more story based and more based on different themes. You mentioned that, you know, this was kind of Kinjo getting, you know, to kind of run wild with, you know, political commentary and think, you know, statements about racism and pacifism and even, you know, some things to the Vietnam War, which was, you know, brewing. It's interesting that probably at the time for, you know, a Saturday morning, you know, kids show, a lot of people would probably say, oh, it's not the place for that. But Eiji Tsuburaya really loved what Kinjo was doing with that. And he encouraged him to, you know, hey, say these things through these shows. Go for it. You know, it's not a far cry from what he was, what they were doing with the Godzilla series at Toho. And so Eiji really kind of fostered and facilitated in that process.
Yeah, and this is often kind of heralded as Japan's answer to Star Trek, as far as combining sort of pop entertainment with like sort of heady ideas in like a sci-fi package.
Yeah, so. I think, you know, the popularity of shows like Lost in Space, you know, really had, you know, really kind of triggered that, you know, hey, let's focus on, you know, space and aliens and things like that.
I do think we should just go ahead and hit the elephant on the room. Just, you know, first thing, all three of us watched this show and had a similar situation in the first, what would you say, 10, 20 episodes?
Yeah, is this 49 episodes?
Yeah, it's the longest. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I think all the shows that we've talked about kind of has this in common, where it kind of finds its footing, it finds steady ground, you know, in the back half a little bit. That's not to say the first half doesn't have its brilliant episodes, but, you know, so Ultra Q is a Twilight Zone mashup with Kaiju, and Ultraman, Monster of the Week, Giant Monster Attacks, Ultraman is a dick to it, and next thing. With Ultra 7, it's alien invasion of some sort for the bulk of episodes. So this monster or this race of aliens will invade Earth, and then Ultra 7 will have to stop it. Dan is, like Eric said, he is not someone who's merged with this host. He is the alien. He is Ultra 7. The first, you know, batch of episodes, there's some standouts, but, you know, it's usually, okay, evil race comes to Earth, Ultra 7 transforms and beats it up and goes on to the next thing. But the back half is where you really get a lot more of, I think, those heady concepts. And we'll talk about some of those episodes. I do want to mention some of the standouts in the first half. There's some really classic episodes in there. I mean, does anyone here dislike the Ile King episode?
No, that's a good episode.
Yeah,
I think it's also it's not just the fact that maybe the first half is a little weaker. I think it's also managing expectations. I know when I watched went through the series again this last time, knowing what I was going to be watching and knowing it wasn't going to be that Ultraman thing where it's like there's a prominent kaiju that it's, you know, running amok, and it's closer to like a superhero or a Henshin show where the hero is the draw.
Yeah. And it's not Ultraman. It's not It's less of a kaiju show than either of the other two shows.
Yeah, I would say it's the least kaiju of all three. And really, you shouldn't even go in with the thinking of that it's a kaiju show. It maybe has a few, and yeah, the hero goes giant.
You get more giant aliens than you do. Yeah,
there's
giant
kaiju
monsters.
In it. Like Elay King, for example, is probably the most iconic from this series, and it's a great episode. But yeah,
I think you'll enjoy it though more if you don't think it's if you're just going in thinking it's more of a Henshin hero show or something
that. Yeah. For sure. But
it actually, even then, it's still got its own unique vibe. I know they had the sort of the Kakaida phenomenon in Hawaii, and at the same time, they brought Ultra 7 over to Hawaii, and they had a lot of shows doing really well. You had Kakaida, Kamen Rider V3, the original Go Ranger or whatever. But Ultra 7, they brought that over there as well, and it didn't really do well. Mm-hmm. Kids are bored by it, and I can see why, especially if you're going by these other shows that are like kind of, you know, the Saturday morning cartoon type thing, really bright, colorful, and very easy concepts to grasp, villains, heroes, stuff like that. And you have this other show that's a lot more philosophical. The sets are all gray. Everyone dresses in gray. It's definitely easy to see why this, conversely, wouldn't have latched on. And then also, it's also more popular than Ultraman in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, in Japan, it's like the most popular one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that first batch episodes, you also get the Metron episode, which is directed by Akio Jisoji as well. My favorite episode of the series is the Pegasa episode, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, because I have all kinds of stuff to say about that episode. The King Joe two-parter is great.
King Joe is great.
Yeah, King Joe is pretty good.
I like the Utom episode a lot. That's also Nakajima in the Utom costume. And then, yeah, in the back half is when you really get to the hits. The Jiron episode is amazing, is brilliant.
The way they shot that episode, I know Matt was commenting when he was watching that. That's got, like, some beautiful sets and just really haunting stuff going on there. That's a great episode.
There's an episode that's kind of like a Fantastic Voyage thing where Ultraman has to shrink and, like, go into the creature and fight like other creatures inside there.
So one thing about that episode, it's a really good episode, but gosh darn, man, they didn't even like try to hide the balloons
at all. Yeah, at all.
Like, it's so obvious. Like, it's like, I don't know, man, but I don't know if what you could have done to do it differently, but they're very obviously like they're supposed to be cells or whatever, but they're very obviously balloons just floating around.
The dinosaur tank episode is awesome because he fights a dinosaur tank. I mean, that's awesome. There's one I really like. I don't know. I can't quite remember the creature's name. I'm kind of scrolling through. Dankan is this alien monster. Man, again, a lot of these monsters, they just want to be left alone. But he comes to Earth because his planet's all like overpopulated and messed up, and he takes away like part of the city and puts it somewhere else so he can live in it. And sure enough, I mean, Ultra 7 just transforms and kills the shit out of him. But he like turns him into like a foam blob. But I really like that monster. That episode's a lot of fun, and I feel like I never really see anyone talk about that monster, that episode. There's a Kappa episode.
That's a weird one.
Really bizarre, but I like that one a lot.
That is a really good episode.
I like the one, I forget which one it's called, but there's like a, it takes place, and there's like an American woman and her Japanese husband, and they're like in a secluded log cabin, And you eventually come to find out there's like a underground alien base there or something.
Yeah, it turns out they're in this like M.C. Escher like esque alien base. And yeah, that's such a weird episode too. I also like there's one with this ice monster. He almost looks like a slug with wings.
Gandar, something like that. Yeah,
I really like that one a lot. I think that's one of the first episodes where like if you're powering through this series and you're starting to feel like okay, some of these episodes are just filler. Once you get to that episode, I think that's when it's like okay, you're gonna start getting to the real winners.
Yeah, because it definitely feels different, like, because the team, like, they're, like, just a hair's breadth away from losing, like, it's a pretty, because that's the one when, like, everything is frozen, right? At the end, and, like, the whole base is frozen, and, like, people are dying.
Yeah, he's stuck in the snow, and he can't find the Ultra Eye to transform.
Yeah.
the one where he's framed for murder, because, do you remember that? There's like so he walks in and there happens to be a bunch of Americans there, like or Gajans, I don't know, just people speaking English. I'm like, murderer, murderer, and it ends up he was framed for killing an alien, and it was all a ruse. Basically, that was a pretty interesting concept.
So I
want to say about the back half. So I actually think that episodes 39 and 40, which is like the seven assassination plan, when he's like in this big crystal crucifix for two episodes.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a better ender for the series than the two that we get. I don't know.
Right. Better than the Pandon episode. I feel like that has a similar problem to the last episode of Ultraman, where the final baddie isn't like all that intimidating or tough.
Yeah.
You know? Two-headed. Yeah, it's like a two-headed bird thing. It's just not... I agree. I agree with that.
I do like the idea of the last episode where they're like, look, if you keep doing this, you're gonna die. Like, if you don't...
Oh, yeah, it's really cool, but then Pandon is kind of... Oh, yeah, and I like Pandon a lot, but he's kind of lackluster, and I feel like the other two episodes would have just been better if those orders been reversed.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Just stick the sacrifice stuff into that previous two-parter.
You guys want to talk about the characters a little bit? Because I think he has some interesting things to say. Dan, and Matt doesn't.
Yeah, Dan, I think, is one of the best Ultramen out of the franchise, because I feel like he's one that we actually did get to know. We got to see him in a lot of different situations, and we didn't really get that with Hayata. Hayata was, I'm the square-jawed hero, and I'm going to transform at the end, beat the bad guy, go home. But with Dan, we got to see him in like situations where he was about to die. We got to see him react to him being an alien. You know, you get to see him react to more situations.
I think it also helps that he's not... With Hayata, it was always kind of a problem that he's essentially tag-teaming Ultraman in. Like, Ultraman's a completely separate character, and like they just kind of cohabitate the same body. But with Dan, he is Ultra 7, so like when he's fighting, it's actually the same character, and I think that helps a little bit.
Right. It's a fun cast, and I like that this series... Ultraman would do it every now and then, but this series, like, you would have an episode that's just based on one of the cast members, and, you know, would bring in, like, their outside lives. Like, the one character, his name is the actor that, Arashi is Ultraman, right?
Huh? What?
Arashi is an Ultraman character,
yeah,
right?
Yes. Yeah, but he looks identical, the guy.
It's the same actor. It's the same actor. Who is he in Ultra 7?
Isn't it
Shigeru Arashi or whatever.
Okay, right. Furuhashi. But there's a whole episode where like the A plot is kind of like him and like his mom back home wants him to quit and everything, but you know he has to, you know, kind of save the world. I like that this show was willing to kind of explore the side characters in that way a little bit more.
So I agree, but with one exception or two exceptions. And this is why I think the Ultraman cast is better, is because Soga and Amagi, which is the character Ben Furuya plays,
he's boring as sin.
They're both boring as sin, dude. Like, they have no character. They're worse than Hayata, man. Like, they have nothing.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the I
like Soga a lot.
No, Soga's okay, but here's the thing. I did not really connect with many of the characters in the show, and it was a slog. Like, you guys, I was complaining, like, daily when I would watch an episode.
Yeah.
Because it really felt, with some exceptions, in fact, I actually, my favorite episode is the same one that Bird had mentioned, the Dark Zone with Pegasa or whatever, but that episode is incredible. And there are some really good episodes in this, but I really struggled to like plow through those episodes, and I was bored. Like, I was legitimately bored at times. It just felt like monotonous, and for every good episode, I felt like there were legitimately two that I was just like, I could have done without seeing that. Like, give me more Dinosaur Tank and less of some of the other crap. Now there, and again, I think that the Crucifix episode, like, that's a crazy episode. The Dark Zone, that's a great episode, but I struggled to relate to the characters a lot. And, you know, Ben Fry's character, like, he just, what does he do?
Yeah, it makes it hard because, like, we've met him. He's a great guy. He's super nice and super charismatic, but none of that comes through with his character.
They didn't give him much to really work with. I mean,
they literally just, I think, had to get seven or six cast members so they can call Ultra 7 Ultra 7. So they just created, like, and you could have combined Amagi and Soga into one, or maybe just given them an Ipe sort of comedic relief. I'm not sure it would have fit in this series, but
I think that's what I missed. And I mean, you know, Anne is okay.
Anne's great. You shut your goddamn mouth.
She's super awesome and attractive, but I don't know if I prefer her or
Fuji.
I think Fuji's got a little more charm to her.
Anne's
just easy on the eyes, for sure.
She's the ultra nurse, basically.
Yeah.
What she is in this show. And I don't know, I struggle to really, like, this show is entertaining at times, but I really struggle to plow through all the episodes. I think the length on this show with as much filler as they put in is what made it suck.
Well, I think if there's a trend that we can pinpoint here, I mean, let's think about this. Ultra Q, 28 episodes. We're like, okay, there's maybe three episodes or something of filler. Ultraman, we are at 39 episodes, and it's like, you're getting kind of fillery here. This one, add another 10 episodes to that. I mean, what is that going to do? I think a lot of these shows are too long. I think there's too many episodes, and
I think Q could have been 13. I think Ultraman could have been like 21. Same for 7. And in fact, I think what's kind of clouding my view of this a little bit is on my last watch through of 7 just recently, I just picked like highlights and I ended up watching about 23-24 episodes, and they were all winners, and they were from like first episode on to the end. But
I think that's the biggest problem with these tokusatsu shows, and I think it's something the shows still suffer from this day. When you told me Garo was only like 25 episodes, I was like jumping for joy. Like, I can't imagine slogging through a 100 episode Kamen Rider show.
That's what I was about to say. Like, 100 episodes? Fuck.
I'm with you guys. Like, that's why I'll never finish the original Kamen Rider, and it's why I'll never. I love the original Sentai series. I saw like the first three or four episodes, and I was like, "Dude, this it was just so much fun. And it's so different from the Power Rangers stuff that we have nowadays. And but that's another one. It's like 100 episodes. And I'm like, there's just no way. I'll never. And it would be different if it was a narrative. Like, if it was not so...
If it was serialized, you know, this is just Monster of the Week stuff. It's too much to be doing 100 or 80 or 50, even 50 episodes, or even, I mean, even in the case of Ultraman, I'll say it, it's too much to even do 39 episodes. I mean, maybe kids can handle that a little bit better, you know, but I don't know, man, I'm old and I can't be doing that anymore. So I want to talk about some highlight episodes. I know this is a long episode, but I think, you know,
we're getting as long as the Ultraman series, basically. That's what's happening right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, a few episodes, and Matt, I think a lot of these highlights that I want to talk about are ones that even you'll back me up in saying they're really good. So I want to talk about two of my favorite episodes right out the gate. And the first one is the one you talked about, The Dark Zone. With the Pegasa alien. And I mean, I remember the first time I saw it, I remember thinking, like, wow, I've never seen a superhero, an episode of a kid's superhero show that heady. But basically, there's this alien he's like a little shadow in the corner of a room. And he shows up and he's kind of playing a victim to the Ultra Garrison, and, you know, he's, you know, can I have a glass of water? And, you know, he starts talking to them about his race and why they came to Earth. And it turns out that his planet is actually on a collision course with Earth. And he's like, you know, and these aliens, these Pegasans, are like, well, you know, I mean, all you have to do is move your planet. I'm sure, you know, it's fine. You know, just move your planet. It's fine. And we're like, we can't move Earth. Like, it's scientifically impossible for us to do this. And they're like, what? Like, this is technology that we've had for like hundreds of years. What are you talking about? Just move the damn Earth. And we're like, we really can't. I'm sorry. And they're like, well, I guess we. And then. It comes down to the final moment where they're like, okay, I mean, we can't do anything. And so we end up blowing up their whole planet. And it's like, wow, you know, we just extinguished an entire planet of sentient beings. And then, like, the kind of twist at the end is that this Pegasan that had been communicating with the team the whole time, he's like, you know, if you don't move, I have to blow up your planet. I have to blow up Earth. I don't want to do it, but I will do it. I have this bomb. It's going to blow up the planet. And Dan has to say, like, hey, man, I really hate to tell you this, but we blew up your planet. We couldn't move the Earth. We had to blow up your planet. And it leaves this alien at the end just kind of, like, not knowing what to do. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll just... fuck off, you know, I have nothing to live for now. And I remember thinking, like, oh my god, like, you're laying that onto a kid's Saturday morning TV show? You're gonna lay all that on a children's audience? And I mean, I can't say enough about Eiji Tsuburaya encouraging these scripts to go for it, you know, just saying, like, hey, you have something to say, go for it. And you know, with the thing about the Pegasans is, you know, they're believing themselves to be superior. They're not, and they won't even accept the idea that an inferior race like humankind would even be capable of destroying them. And, you know, I mean, you could say that they are representative of the Japanese military in World War II. It's just a powerful episode that really kind of, like, blindsided me when I first saw it. I mean, how do you guys feel about that episode? Like, I was, like, awestruck by it.
Yeah, I remember watching that and just it's I mean, one of the best episodes of anything on TV, in my opinion. It's that good. that this specific episode. It is very gut-wrenching, right? I mean, like, when you're watching a show like Ultraman or Ultra 7, it doesn't, you don't always expect to have that kind of material, but like when they have those moments like the Jamila episode in Ultraman or in this particular episode, it really was, I mean, like, I was blown away by it. Everybody that likes tokusatsu in general and science fiction should watch this, because that's honestly how good it is.
Yeah, I mean, I can't add anything else to that. It's like Matt was saying, it's some of the best stuff on TV, as far as the concepts and stuff like that. And Dan has to make some really just
shitty choices.
Yeah. and he doesn't do them lightly. It's not like, well, this is, you know, he's tormented by him. He agonizes about making a lot of the choices he has to make. And sometimes he, throughout the show, you assume he's the hero. He's on the side of people, but sometimes he kind of points the finger back at people and like, you guys are being shitty. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's just an amazing episode. My second favorite is going to be Super Weapon R1, which I picked out as a point of the conversation, which is the episode with, I hope I'm saying the monster's name right, Girion?
Giron.
Right, but the plot of that is two scientists that work for the Ultra Guard are working on creating these new weapons, because, you know, I mean, at this point, Earth has been through enough alien invasion, enough wars with other planets, and they're like, you know, we've been through enough of these wars, we want to make the most devastating weapon possible, ever. And all the human cast is like, yeah, that sounds great, let's blow stuff up, you know? And Dan, I think you might even get some internal monologue, I'm not entirely sure if I'm remembering that correctly, but he's immediately, like, unsettled by that. He's like, what? Why are they, he's like, I don't understand humans. Why are they like wanting to make weapon? What? And you know, they make this weapon called the R1, which is said to have the power of about 8,000 hydrogen bombs. And they're like, where do we test this thing? And they scout all these planets. They're looking at different stars. Where can we test it? You know, and they find and you know, the idea is they want to make this thing. They're like, yes, we'll have the biggest, most powerful bomb. Anyone that challenges us, we can just obliterate them instantaneously. We have the biggest one, the best one. We have bombs. We have the best bombs, you know, to put it into Trump speak. And they find this star called the Giron star. And they're like, we scouted it everywhere. We looked everywhere. There's no living being on here. Let's do it. Let's test it out. And sure enough, they blow up this star, and this monster, Girion, however the proper pronunciation. It turns out, hey, someone lived there, and you just killed off the entire planet, and he's pissed. So he comes to Earth, and he's like, he's attacking cities, and one of his weapons is he emits this radioactive ash, which, I mean, hello, anyone with a brain can figure out, you know, the symbolism. And I mean, he's killing people, he's on Earth, and he's destroying cities, and it's like, hey, if this never happened, if we didn't just feel like we had to get into this dick-measuring contest about who can build the biggest weapons, us or these alien invaders that haven't even attacked us yet, this monster wouldn't be angry, he wouldn't have lost his home planet, and he wouldn't be destroying our people. And that's another episode that really just was unexpectedly deep for a show like this, and I remember watching it and just being like, oh my god, this is still relevant. We are entering into these dick measuring contests with North Korea every day, every single day. We literally just had our president tweet about how big his nuclear button was. Now his button was bigger than their button. And it's just like, oh my god, this is sci-fi, it's kaiju, it's superhero stuff, but it's real. I mean, it's like this episode might as well have just been a documentary for me watching it, especially like in the current climate. I was like, oh my god, this is insane. And of course, this is also a great example of an Ultraman being a dick, where god damn, Jiron gets it bad. He gets, man, his arms are getting cut off. Seven takes off his little mohawk blade. It's called the Eye Slugger, and like slits his throat, and there's this arterial spray, and there's blood, and like the monster's feathers just flying everywhere. And what makes it even more disturbing is that the Ultra 7 theme song, which is like super happy, like go lucky, is playing the whole time, and it's like, oh my god. But no, it's a great episode, man. I remember after I watched it, I was like, Matt, wait till you get to this episode. I don't care about how much you're complaining about anything else in the show. Just wait till you get to this episode.
Yeah, it's that episode. poor guy, right? Gets it so bad. It's like ripping his freaking arms off. I mean, like, it's everything you just said. Make like the setup. It makes it incredibly just sad. I don't know. This makes it very sad. We still one of the episodes. I don't know if it's my favorite, but we haven't talked about the band episode yet.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good segue, because I did want to mention, as of March 2011, anyone who has any clue about anything that Japan has gone through in the last decade knows. March 2011, this episode is now banned from television in Japan. I'm not sure if it's banned from home video at this point, but it is banned from television, because there is a scene where Jiron wipes out a power plant a big wave wipes out a power plant after he lands in the water. Speaking of banned episodes, we do have, yes, Matt, that is episode 12, which is a Jisoji episode, that is the brother from another planet. Let's talk about it. It's missing from any home video release. I don't think it's been shown on TV since the 60s. It is out there in the wild, because from what I understand, well, the TNT version was broadcast on TNT in the 90s with the dub. So, you know, there's VHS rips of that floating around. From what I understand, someone had the audio of the Japanese episode, but not the video. So they synced it up to the video from the TNT broadcast. So you can watch it in Japanese. It's just a little weird. Because like there's the TNT logo with the Japanese everything. It's banned because the alien monster was called a Hibaku Seijin. Hibakushi, who I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but Hibakusha was a term that referred to atomic bomb survivors. This creature wasn't even called that in the episode, but in a 1968 magazine, kids magazine, the monster was profiled in like this pictorial piece. And in 1970, there was that, and I mentioned that magazine because that's where the name was first coined. In 1970, there was a teenage girl who saw that on a card that was in one of her little brother's. Boys magazines, and there, I guess there was a piece about Ultra 7. And she told her father, who was a member of the Tokyo branch of the Confederation of A and H Bomb Sufferers Organizations, which is like a survivors group. Tsuburaya quickly changed the name to Vampire Seijin after this really scathing article had shown up in the newspaper. There was a public outcry, and so Tsuburaya banned it from basically ever being seen again. It's under a self-imposed ban, the same way Toho has banned Half-Human and Prophecies of Nostradamus, the same way Disney has put a self-imposed ban on Song of the South. It's just stuff that, like, due to public outcry and fear of offending anyone, it's you can't watch it. From what I understand, that's the same group that scrutinize those Toho releases, and I think a lot of those people aren't even survivors themselves. I think Maybe I'm wrong, but I think they're almost kind of like a social justice slacktivism kind of organization.
Yeah. So I had never seen the episode before yesterday. And after having it hyped up so for so many years, I just thought it was gonna be like so in your face, just offensive. I was like, I honestly, there's nothing in this. Like, you really,
yeah. Like, it's all the offensive stuff is more. I guess I'll use the word subtle. Like, I mean, the alien monster is clearly has what is like keloid, you know, burns kind of on his tissue, and I think they mentioned that, you know, they come here to harvest our blood to have a infinite, you know, supply of blood to transfuse because their planet has basically been ruined by nuclear war. But yeah, aside from the monster's appearance, I see how that could hit home a little bit. And I mean, yeah, I guess I could see the term that was used in that magazine, you know, Hibaku Seijin being like, oh wow, that's a little extreme, but there's nothing in the episode that's like super confrontational, you know? Yeah. I think I hate using this word, but I don't have a better one to use right now because I don't think social justice is a bad thing whatsoever. But, you know, what a lot of people would say, describe in a derogatory sense, social justice warriors are what had gotten it and these Toho productions banned. I mean, I don't know. It's weird. It's just strange because there's other shows and stuff that I've seen that have tackled these subjects a lot harder and are not considered, you know, embarrassments by the production company.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of something like, here's an example. After 9/11, Lilo and Stitch had some stuff that went to editing, right? Because there's a plane crash, and originally that was going to take place in a city, but it was going to be released so close to, well, right after 9/11, they changed it to where, like, there was no city there. They're flying through basically, like, this island. That, I mean, like, I get maybe delaying release. I sort of understand. I mean, I can't even imagine the aftermath of atomic bombing, right? But I can see how that might affect somebody. But there's, as Bird said, there's other shows that do that. And if you think about, like, the Gyron episode or whatever with like the wave that comes and crashes. There's a ton of tokusatsu films and shows where like there's a giant tsunami that comes and just wipes out everything.
Yeah, like, that seems like a really stupid line to draw, especially when you have like Godzilla 14 that directs and Shin that, you know, purposefully kind of do that. So
well, yeah, it would be almost like someone pulling Shin Godzilla because, oh, Godzilla clearly in that has what is, you know, meant to evoke the idea of, you know, keloid burns. That's what the Shin Godzilla design is, like, all about. And, it would be similar to that. Like, I don't know. It's very odd.
Maybe just because Tsurai is, like, a kid-friendly organization, so they have a lower threshold.
Like, somehow, are they? Like, have you seen what they do to these monsters? Like, cutting them into pieces? And I felt like it was going to be, you know, Pennywise waving an arm at its victim ripping it off of him.
It's actually a pretty decent episode, and it's got that stylish Jisoji direction.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, I want to move on to the Alien Metron episode. That's the alien that is always like trying to sit down. What is he trying to do? Drink tea or eat with people? Why does he do that all the time? But I love that that fight that they get into in the end against the sunset. And
yeah, that's a great.
That's
episode.
Like a highlight of Ultra anything for me. I just love, again, that's just Soji, man. He's the man. Yeah.
That's one of the most iconic images of Ultra anything.
It's a good shot.
I want to mention. I'm flipping through this Monster Encyclopedia, and you know, so that's kind of like
highlighted a lot of these already. But,
Dinosaur Tank, man, we already talked about it, but that one is that's yeah.
That's a good one, and it's like it's got a really tight, like it's suspenseful. It has, and like it's clearly kind of modeled after like spy movies in a way. But yeah, all the shots are close ups of people sweating, and like yeah, you always feel like the clock is ticking.
That's one I don't like, actually.
No,
I love Dinosaur Tank as a monster, but I feel like it's so out of nowhere and just stupid.
It definitely is out of nowhere. I'm not going to say that you're wrong, but it's.
I like the U-Tom episode. That's where Dan actually runs into, like, the person whose, like, form he took. And he's, like, trying to, like, you know, keep his face hidden. And then, yeah, U-Tom is the robot. They're played by Nakajima. And then they blow up, like, the base. And at the end, there's just this voiceover narration that's like, yeah, we decimated an entire community of beings. Were they all bad after all? And it's like, what the heck? That's a heady thing to leave a kid show on. There's one with the weird alien thing in the cave that has like the giant snake. That's one of the most bizarre episodes.
Yeah. One thing the show does kind of decently is it has at the time, a decent multicultural sort of, you'd have like Western actors show up for an episode or something and have decent parts where they wouldn't be stereotypically like bad guys or idiots.
Yeah, that's true.
There is a robot, Ultra 7, which I'm surprised we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah. What's the one, what's the thing that eats cars? Crazy Gone.
That is actually one of my favorite episodes.
It's a great one.
Yeah, I like Crazy Gone a lot. And then I do want to mention one that actually doesn't have any real, like, monsters or giant creatures, and that's, I think it's called Nightmare on Planet 4, but that's where Dan, they end up on this planet of these robots.
Yeah, that episode is,
And it's messed up. They live in this society where humans are shot, like in a firing squad are killed like for like a TV show like for entertainment and they're like this oppressed race and you know the robots are kind of this is another Jisoji episode. The robots are these like they're almost dressed like Nazis and I mean again the allegory is clear as day. But yeah, man, that's a messed up episode.
Yeah, it's a good one, though.
I like the Alien Guts episode, too.
Yeah, Alien Guts, he would be back. But,
We're almost on 3.5 hours. Do we want to...
I don't blame him. Depending on how much we can cut out, I think we've had really good discussion on all three of these. But yeah, this is probably going to be our longest episode. But I think it's justified, honestly. But yeah, we should wrap it up. Matt, do you have any favorite... I mean, we've heard your complaints about the series, but that being said, are there any favorite episodes that we haven't really covered yet?
Yeah, you've covered a lot of the ones that I liked. I mean, I don't hate everything about the show. It's just it felt more of a slog to get through compared to the other two.
Well, the good thing about all these shows is after you watch them all the way through once, you know the episodes you're gonna want to rewatch. So I mean, if I'm like, oh, I'm gonna watch Ultra 7 again, I'm probably gonna go to the episodes that I really like. Oh, there's also like the one with the mass shootings,
Yeah,
the guy in the aliens are like giving kids guns, like real, and the idea is like to basically use them to like kill humans, like another relevant episode. I like the pocket monsters too. I really like that concept, and I think it has been said that it was like a direct inspiration for Pokemon also.
Good point. Definitely needed to be said. Matt, what would you rate it out of 5?
I'm gonna do a 4 for this. I mean, the trouble with this one is the highs are probably some of the highest out of the entire Ultra franchise, and the lows, like Matt said, are some of the biggest lulls. But those highs are so high that I feel like I owe it a 4. and realistically, all these shows could be cut down a few episodes. So
I'm at a 3.5. I do think it's good, but I couldn't. It was really hard to get through, and I think I got a docket for that. The episodes that are good are really, really good, and I do think it's worth watching. But it was a struggle for me, and I think that's really probably the biggest thing working
against. Yeah, the highs are highs, the lows are lows. You know,
where you at, Eric?
5. It's my favorite of the bunch. Yeah, it's probably my favorite Tōkaku TV show, actually.
Right, yeah. Well, you're definitely not alone. I think this is critically probably the most well-received, at least in the Ultras series. So.
I could give you guys a bunch of recommendations for other Ultra shows, but I think Eric's going to die. So
I feel like he's probably seen them all.
I mean, yeah, and that, and I think it's real simple. If you're in the mood for something Q-like, you go with Neo Ultra Q, which is supposedly available somewhere. legit stateside, but we've never really been able to ascertain.
You have to watch it live on Tōkaku TV.
Which is ridiculous. I know Matt and I reached out to them, and they said it should be available for streaming eventually, but it never came to pass as far as I know. So
there's still time.
Yeah, there's still time. There also was the Ultra Q movie and the Ultra Q Dark Fantasy TV shows.
A lot of which the movie's never been subbed, even by fans, and then... Yeah, I mean, as a rule, like, nothing Ultra Q can, like, come out translated, in at least 20 years, so...
I think from what I've seen of all of them, the one that's the best quality and the best kind of in tone is actually Neo Ultra Q, and it's only, like, 13 episodes or something, so if and when that's available, track that down. Ultraman, tons of Ultraman shows, I think... The one that was closest in spirit is actually a really crappy show. It's Ultraman Powered, but that one was like just a remake, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm. I like Ultraman 80 a lot. I'm about probably a third of the way through that. And so I like the idea of Ultra, the Ultra hero being basically, he's a teacher by day and he's part of the, I don't remember what they actually call it, but basically the science patrol in that show by night. And It is more kidified, but it's really charming, and he finds himself in some really interesting situations because of the kids. I watched the first few episodes of Ultraman Leo, and that honestly has one of the best openings I can think of for a show. Like, the way that it opens, the crazy special effects, and it's a two-part opening, like, that is, it was incredible, and I'm going to definitely get to watching Leo at some point. Ultraman X, I really like. It's 26 episodes, I think, and Grisa, the main villain, is incredible. We mentioned him earlier, but also what I like about Ultraman X is there is an ongoing story, an ongoing arc that's happening. It's not just Monster of the Week. The same thing is true so far for me anyway of Ultraman Jeet. I know that's not the most popular with some people, but there is an ongoing story arc there, and the special effects by, I think, primarily Taguchi, they're incredible. So those two series are worth checking out of the newer stuff. I know Tiga is really popular, Ultraman Tiga. I remember the terrible 4Kids dub, but I've seen a couple of the movies. They're pretty decent. And then Ultra Galaxy is wonderful. If you want to see a good monster basically take on a bunch of bad monsters, that's what that show is. And there's Ultra Galaxy Neo and Ultra Galaxy. And it stars Gomura, which is my personal favorite Ultraman monster. So those will be my recommendations if you want to check out some other Ultra stuff.
For me, I'm going to go with a more recent show, which is Ultraman Max, which in my opinion was the last truly great Ultraman show. And coincidentally, it was right before Bandai kind of took over everything. Gee, I wonder why that could be.
Max is great.
And Max, you have a lot of great directors. Akio Jisoji does a sequel episode to the Metron episode of Ultraman 7 that he directed back in the 60s. Kaneko does some episodes. Takashi Miike does some great episodes. I mean, it's fantastic. The two Ultraman Mabeus movies. I'm not too hot on the series, but I really like the two movies they did. Ultraman Mabeus and the Ultra Brothers and the Superior 8 Ultraman Brothers, whatever the hell kind of title that is. The second one is especially good. I haven't watched the whole series yet, but from what I've seen, I do really like Return of Ultraman. That's another one where you had some great directors in there, including Ishiro Honda doing a lot of the episodes as well. So yeah, I mean, this is just our first foray into Ultraman, and I thought it was very important to do these three shows together because I think they really are a kind of trilogy of sorts, and that they're all three very different shows, and each show that followed would take elements of each one. And again, having Tsuburaya actually there for these three shows, I think is important also. And, you know, the design team, the art directors, the writers, I mean, are carried over from all three of these shows. So they're very much companion pieces to one another rather than things that I think are competing against each other or whatever.
I will quickly add that if you're looking for something similar to Ultra 7, there's a 90s like mini series on TV. I've never seen it, but it looks good.
You're talking about the
Heisei Ultra 7.
Yeah. I've actually seen that. It's not bad.
There's also Ultra 7 X.
That's what I was going to say. Ultra 7 X. There's like, that's very hit and miss. It's a very short series, but it's like if you melded Ultra 7 with Garo. So it's very Matrix-y inspired. Everyone's in black leather, but it's also kind of X-Files but it's got some really good stuff. I'd say there's probably three or four super solid episodes. I enjoy the series. Give it a check out. It's a real short watch.
All right, and yeah, I mean, we'll be back with more Ultraman talk. It won't be this long, I promise, but I mean, this has the Guinness record for the show with the most spin-offs, so there is a lot that we're going to be talking about in the future. So, but yeah, these three shows are definitely the entry point. All right, anyone? We good? Everyone good?
Good. Have a good night. Yes. Watch.
Yes. Watch.
All right, good night.